Do you want me to start? Do you want to do the same?
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Hello and welcome to In Particular,
Tales from the Particle Frontier.
I'm Tova Holmes.
And I'm Laura Gentil.
And we're both particle physicists here at CERN.
In this podcast, we'll explore physics and the process of discovering physics at the Large Hadron Collider.
We're coming to you from the ATLAS experiment, one of the particle detectors at the LHC.
This July, one of our sister experiments, LHCb, found the first conclusive evidence for pentaquarks.
So, what are pentaquarks?
Well, as the name suggests, a pentaquark is made of five quarks.
But what makes that a new particle, not just five quarks?
These five quarks are temporarily bound together by the strong force, which makes a new particle with its own properties that are different from just the sum of the five quarks.
This may sound a bit esoteric, but the same force holds together three quarks to form the protons that make up all the matter around us.
I guess you could call protons triquarks, but in general, we call any composite particle, which is made of quarks, a hadron, as in the Large Hadron Collider, which collides protons.
So if protons and pentaquarks are made of quarks, what are quarks made up of?
As far as we can tell, nothing. They are fundamental particles.
In this episode, we'll take a look at the fundamental particles that make up the bread and butter of particle physics.
As well as everything else, including bread and butter.
Instead of going through a list, we thought we'd let the physicists who love them introduce the particles to you.
But first, a quick primer.
All the fundamental particles we know are contained in the Standard Model.
As far as we've observed so far, there are 17 fundamental particles.
12 of them make up all the matter we know.
These include the six quarks, the lightest of which are called the up and down quark, which together make up both the proton and the neutron.
And there are six leptons, the most familiar of which is the electron.
Four of the remaining particles are involved in communicating forces. For example, the photon, which transmits the electromagnetic force.
And that leaves one, which is the Higgs. The Higgs doesn't really fit into the other categories, but its interactions give all the other particles their mass. Not all of the particles in the Standard Model are stable,
even though they're fundamental.
Any particle with similar properties to a particle that's lighter than it will eventually decay to that lighter particle. So the only stable particles we have are the lightest of each type.
Of the particles that make up the matter we interact with, the only stable ones are the up quark, the down quark, and the electron. To get a better sense of these particles, we asked our colleagues about their favorites.
I'm Tom Olazovich. I'm a rising fifth-year grad student at Harvard.
What is your favorite particle?
My favorite particle is the Higgs. It's a very stereotypical answer, but yes.
Why is that?
Because it's very unique. It's the only spin zero particle, a fundamental one that we have in nature right now that we know about. And so just because of that, I think it's my favorite.
So we said at the beginning that the Higgs doesn't really fit into the other categories. And one of the things that's different about the Higgs is this thing called spin.
It's called spin because the math of it looks like the particle's spinning, and you can predict things the same way you would with angular momentum in a regular object. But the fundamental particles, as far as we know, don't actually have any dimensions. So it's hard to make it seem like a literal spin.
The leptons and quarks all have spin 1/2, and the force carriers all have spin 1.
So the thing about the Higgs that makes it totally different from all of the others is that it has spin 0. Until we found the Higgs, we weren't sure that such a thing could actually exist. And we have a lot of beyond the Standard Model theories that involve spin zero particles. So the way that we understand maybe how the Big Bang happened involves theoretical particles that are also spin zero. So seeing that it's possible to have a spin zero particle makes you a little more excited about a theory that involves them in the future.
I also think it's cool that we had predicted the spin zero particle. We'd never observed a fundamental spin zero particle. It was a requirement for the Higgs boson to have spin zero. And in fact, we measured that the thing we discovered, the Higgs boson, does have spin zero.
That's true. So theorists are sometimes very good at predicting things.
I'm Kyle Cormier. I'm a PhD student with the University of Toronto working on ATLAS.
And what is your favorite particle?
The top quark. It's the best, hands down. No question.
Why is it the best particle?
Because it's the one that I work with. No, it's also in a very interesting place, though, as the heaviest particle and as a quark which decays before it hadronizes, which gives you some interesting insights into a world that otherwise is kind of hidden from us by strong interactions that make it really hard to probe.
So like we said, quarks can create bound states that we call hadrons. In fact, in general, quarks have to create bound states. Because the way the strong force works, it won't let quarks be alone.
No, they need company, so they need to form bound states with other quarks. In general, we can't see bare quarks. We can't see a single quark by itself. We only ever see quarks that are forming hadrons. So we can't isolate a single up quark and look at it. That's impossible.
But like Kyle said, the top quark is the heaviest particle. And because it's so heavy, it decays very, very quickly. It's very unstable. And it decays so quickly that it doesn't have a chance to hadronize. And so that means that we can look at the decay products that come from the top quark and be looking directly back at what a top quark looked like, not what a top hadron looked like.
This is excitement, I guess, for nerds.
Yes. It's really, really cool if all you do is take decay products and look at where they came from.
Yeah, so we can get closest to seeing the top quark directly.
In addition to the fundamental properties of the particles, a lot of physicists were interested in how they could be used as tools.
Okay, my name is Mohammed Al-Hurub. I am from Palestine. I am a member of ATLAS experiment, and I am employed by the University of Oklahoma.
And what is your favorite particle?
I prefer top quark because it's the heaviest fundamental particle we have. And it can help us to probe physics beyond the standard model. Studying the top quark helps us to understand many fundamental parameters in nature, like couplings between the Higgs boson and the top quark, or many new particles, the proposed particles can decay to the top quark. So it's a tool or a framework to understand physics or nature.
Again, the property that makes the top quark one of the best tools is the fact that it is the heaviest particle. And things like the Higgs boson, as well as hopefully new particles, which we haven't seen yet, may interact most strongly with the heaviest particle.
So what Mohammed really cares about is finding new particles that we've never seen before. And in a lot of cases, the best tool we have to look for it is the top quark.
However, the top quark isn't the only way we can look for new particles. There are other particles that also are good tools of discovery.
My name is Stephen Goldfarb.
So what is your favorite particle?
My favorite particle. I love all of the particles. You can't live without all of the particles. I guess if I really have to choose, I'll choose the muon.
Can you describe the muon?
Muons are awesome. Muons, they get to go through everything, just about. They get to travel really fast. They travel through our atmosphere and hit us over the head all the time. So if you're a muon, you get to go through people. I'm not sure if that's nice or not. But you often bring discovery. That's what's really cool about muons. You bring discovery.
What do you mean?
It means that if you see a couple of them, and they have different signs, and they have the right kind of angle to each other, and the right momentum, they might bring you news of a resonance.
What's a resonance?
A resonance would be when there was a particle, which might have lived a long time or might have lived a short time, that decayed. If you take a look, for example, one of my favorite plots is just you simply take you make the assumption that a particle decayed into the muon pair that you look at. You measure their angle or their angles between them, you measure their momentum, and then you can say what the mass would have been of that particle. You make that mass plot, and what you look at is Nobel Prizes through time. So as the mass goes up, you see these different resonances. You can see, oh, that was the discovery of charm. That was the discovery of beauty. This was the discovery of the Z boson. And we all look at that immediately. The moment that we turn on, especially at 13TeV, the first thing coming out is to look at these plots.
If you had to put the muon into the particle zoo, how would you describe the muon?
It's just an electron. It's exactly an electron. It just happens to be more massive. That's the only real difference, but that does make a lot of differences. And so as such, it doesn't get to live forever. It's not stable. It decays. Muons are very distinguished. They go to the calorimeter and they might leave a little trace to say, hey, I've been here. And then they pass on through and they get out to the muon detectors, which are, of course, the coolest parts of any detector, the muon detectors. Because, you know, ATLAS is a very special detector. And in fact, its size and shape are the way they are because of muons. So it's very large because that gives you a lot of space to measure the muon's curvature, so how much it's curving because of the magnetic field. And you had to build it with these magnets that were completely different than other magnets we made before, and with enormous forces, which could just tear the entire detector apart. Many people don't realize it, but the forces when the magnetic field is on are similar in magnitude to what it would take to lift the detector up off of the ground. So they're very, very strong forces. And unless you build your detector correctly, it could implode or have problems. But it's really cool. That's why ATLAS is just so much cooler than any other experiment, because of those magnets.
In addition to being useful tools of discovery, some people were also interested in specific particles because of the way that we see them in the detector.
I'm Michael Kagan. I work for SLAC.
What is your favorite particle?
My favorite particle. Well, right now I've been working a lot with the bottom quark. And maybe it hasn't always been my favorite particle, but it's my favorite particle right now.
Why is it your favorite particle?
It's my favorite particle because it's very fun to find. So it's very difficult to find, and difficult things to find are often fun things to find. And it turns out they're connected with a wide range of really, really interesting physics. Not only physics we know about, but the physics that we haven't seen yet. In other words, there's a lot of predictions about how the bottom quark might be involved in predictions of new physics like supersymmetry or dark matter or extra dimensions. So these bottom quarks may be produced in interactions or collisions that have things like dark matter or supersymmetric particles. And so finding them allows us to work our way backwards and look for all sorts of crazy new physics.
Why are they hard to find?
They're hard to find because they only live for 1.5 trillionths of a second. And although they're traveling at about the speed of light, when they're traveling at near the speed of light, they can move, you know, kind of a millimeter to a centimeter, that range, before they decay. And they split apart. They spontaneously decay into several other particles. And so the way that you find a bottom quark is identifying that point in space where this particle decayed by tracing back all these other particles, all these other trajectories to the point where the bottom quark decayed. And it turns out identifying, you know, where three or four different particles, you know, were produced when there's thousands of particles in a collision is not the easiest task.
Sounds like fun.
It is fun.
I'm Alex Tuna. I'm a postdoc. Should I go last name? Damn it! I'm already... You can always cut out the tuna. My favorite particle is the tau lepton because everybody rages on it because it's a pretty difficult particle to work with. It like decays to a bunch of crap that you're not used to, and it's hard to like reconstruct in the detector, but it's, you know, it's got a lot of soul. It's really fun physics wise and it happens to couple pretty strongly to the Higgs, so it's good to do physics with also. So the tau, like I mentioned, is a type of lepton. So the lepton is this class of particle that also includes everyone's favorite lepton, the electron, which is composed of atoms and stuff like that, and also muons. So electrons, muons, and taus are all leptons, and they all are basically identical, except they weigh differently. So the muon is much heavier than the electron, and the tau is much heavier than the muon. Tau leptons are not a super friendly particle. Most ATLAS physicists don't even really think of them as leptons because they're kind of difficult. They're hard to identify. They can decay to a bunch of different stuff. So when an electron travels through ATLAS, it's just an electron. It's when the two protons collide, an electron comes out. You just ask the detector, is there an electron there? But with taus, they get created, and the tau can then decay to a bunch of different stuff. So we actually look for around 6 or 7 different decay modes. So maybe the tau itself decays to an electron, and then we look for an electron that in the detector. So in that sense, it becomes tougher because now you're dealing with a bunch of different particles that you're looking for instead of just a tau lepton. So yeah, they're not super nice to play with, but I think that's just like the rough exterior that they have. Deep down, they're like actually really awesome particles, and they just need more love, I think.
Do you like them in part because they are difficult?
Yeah, actually, it's a pretty fun challenge. Actually coming up with the different ways to measure them and their different decay modes is a pretty interesting challenge.
Anything else you want to say about the taus to convince other people that they're awesome?
Taus always get shit on, but I'm telling you, they're good people. They're just out there interacting with the Higgs, trying to be your friend. You just got to give them a chance.
Hello, this is Masahiro Mori, and I'm a professor from Harvard University. I have been an ATLAS member since, I think, 2007. It's been a while.
So our question for you is, what is your favorite particle?
My favorite? Can I start from the least favorite particle? My least favorite particle is tau, and my favorite particle is muons. Okay.
Can you explain why the tau is your least favorite particle?
Because I can never tell it from anything else, whether it is electron or jet or what, and it's always a real messy thing to work on. Some people find it really, really fascinating. I've noticed that some people really love tau with passion, but muons are the simplest, cleanest thing you can hope for at the hadron colliders. That's why we have this detector with a huge muon detector, and we love muons.
So your favoriteness is based on the experimental signature of these particles. Is that fair?
That's totally fair, because I'm an experimental particle physicist, and I know it. Yes.
Do you think it's a strange question to ask what your favorite particle is?
I wasn't expecting it, for sure. You know, asking particle physicists which particle is your favorite is like asking parents which kid is your favorite. And my son and daughter would be offended if I answer that question.
Do you think taus are offended?
I'm hoping that they are not that sentient, but we don't know for sure.
So far, everyone we've talked to has talked about intrinsic properties of the particle, their theoretical properties, how they interact with the detector, what kind of physics they can bring us. But some people had much more personal reasons for having a favorite particle.
I'm Alessandra Ciocio. Well, Sandra for ATLAS and the friends.
What is your favorite particle?
I don't know. I like all of them. The top quark? Well, because it was the last one to be discovered, and it was discovered with another experiment, and was like the last building block that was needed in that scheme of things. And I thought it was very exciting when that discovery happened. It was very, very exciting. I was in Berkeley. We were already in ATLAS. And dreaming of the future, you know, 20 years later, we are 15 years later, what happened. And I don't know, that was a very exciting moment when, you know, you see a discovery, say, okay, next, we are going to discover something with ATLAS. And so we were already working very, very intensively on making the detector, all the prototypes. We are still designing part of it, yes, in those years. And I had babies, you know, it was a very special time of my of my life. And that particle just came at the right time in my life.
Okay, my name is Stefan Kluth. I work with the Max Planck Institute.
What is your favorite particle?
Oh, my favorite particle. At the moment, it's the Higgs boson, since it's been discovered only a short time ago. And I happen to not really believe in it, so now it's there.
Can you tell me more about that?
Well, I was skeptical about the thing just existing as it was predicted after decades of not finding it. So I took the skeptical point of view, saying that it has to be more complicated than that. So we have to search deeper. But it was easier than I thought.
So even though you were wrong about it, it turned into your favorite?
Well, yeah, it has to be there. Now it's nature, so we have to take it.
So we have people who were fond of a particle because of how it launched the next stage in their career, how it inspired them to keep going and build a new detector, to build Atlas and look into the future, and people who love a particle because it proved them wrong.
Hi, I'm Bijan Haney, and I am a third-year grad student at Penn.
What is your favorite particle?
So I would have to say it's the neutrino.
Neutrinos are the missing three leptons. We've talked about electrons, muons, and taus already. The remaining three are all neutrinos, and they come in three flavors: electron, muon, and tau. The reason we haven't talked about them and the reason you haven't heard about them as much as an electron is because they just don't interact very much with people.
And the reason they don't interact very much with people, or with the Atlas detector, for example, is because they don't carry any electric charge. So the electron, the muon, and the tau all carry electric charge. That's what, for example, gives us electricity, but the neutrinos don't carry any electric charge.
And so neutrinos are just always passing through people, passing through the Earth, without leaving any trace.
They do interact, but only very, very weakly.
All neutrinos are kind of like the angsty teenagers of the particle zoo because they don't show up in the detector. They're always doing weird things. We didn't know why there was a lack of neutrinos from the sun for the longest of time. And then it turns out that neutrinos oscillate and they change flavor. We, 2 years ago, had this crazy new discovery that looked like neutrinos were going faster than the speed of light, and then they weren't. Neutrinos are always doing what you won't expect them to do.
So you like them even though on a detector like Atlas they don't show up?
So I think that's the thing. I like them because they are kind of contrarian. They are difficult to detect. It creates, a mystery. You have to figure out how do we distinguish neutrinos from dark matter particles. And our experiment can't see it at all. But it's something that's still very important to measure. And so measuring something by not measuring it is also kind of poetic in its own way.
You said that you like them because they're contrarian. Is that because you sort of identify with that spirit?
Well, I'd like to think that I could be contrarian, but oftentimes I'm not.
So it's more...
They're an inspiration, I guess. I look up to neutrinos.
There were also a few people who liked particles for what I would call purely aesthetic reasons.
So my name is Katarina Benz, and I work at Stockholm University as a PhD student, so hopefully I will graduate this autumn.
What is your favorite particle?
Charm quark.
Why is that?
Because of the name.
That's all?
Yes.
Hi, my name is Daniela Berner. I'm a PhD student from the German University in Wuppertal.
What is your favorite particle?
I like the top quark. But I'm hoping that we will found a stop quark. So then I would change from the top quark to stop quark.
So why is the top quark your favorite particle?
It's the first particle which I know into more detail.
Did you like it before you learned about it, or you liked it once you learned about it?
I liked it already before, as I saw the particle zoo pictures in the internet. And there I saw the top quark, and this looks... the nicest.
Why did it look the nicest? Oh, you mean like the actual aesthetics of it?
Yep. And also the green color.
So you liked it because of like it had the best plushie?
Yes.
And if we discovered stops, why would those become your favorite particle?
Because they are cooler.
So I think it's pretty interesting that most people's favorites were driven by theoretical reasons or aesthetic reasons or humanistic reasons, but we talk about these things as though they're real things that we've actually developed a relationship with, but we can't hold these particles in our hand. You know, we can't see them directly. Daniela is the only one who sort of talked about having a favorite at the scale of something you can hold in your hand. She talked about this plush toy, which is like part of the particle zoo, you know, that it's a, they're toys that are sewed up that give you sort of handheld, I don't know, soft particle puppets.
And they're very cute.
This you can kind of imagine and interact with. And it's amazing to me how much we can think of these things as real things that have real properties that are mysterious or soulful or difficult when we can't actually see them directly.
It's funny because I do remember that the first time I ever really thought about the Higgs boson at length was during a puppet show in the physics department put on by the grad students, where they had one of these plush toys that was the Higgs, and it was, you know, running around and hiding in cabinets waiting to be found. And I think it took a while for me to replace that image of the Higgs with something a little bit more scientific.
Yeah, I remember that. The Higgs was gray and had like a big pink smile. And I agree. Like when you think of the Higgs, it's kind of gray in color.
So those things stick with you in the absence of any other physical evidence of the particle.
But to me, it's amazing that we move away from that. You know, we eventually do develop thoughts and feelings about these particles that are, I mean, some of them are based on, you know, the way they behave, but we do kind of internalize it.
But it's funny that no one chose any particle that you actually interact with every day, any of the sort of stable particles we talked about before. I mean, there's no, I like a photon because I like to see. I think, you know, it's funny that we didn't get any of that.
Yeah, no one's favorite particle was the electron, the up quark, or the down quark, which is all the things that we're made of.
To be fair, I think people are a little bit primed for this question. We're sitting in the middle of CERN. We're probably interrupting them from their work because that's what we usually do. And we ask them what their favorite particle is while they're in the middle of working on one.
So people gave a lot of really good reasons for what their favorite particles were. But when we pushed a little further, it turned out that most people had actually worked with these particles in the past or were currently studying them.
So for example, when we asked Steve,
have you by any chance worked on a muon detector?
How did you guess that?
And if by any chance you couldn't assume that Tuna had spent way too much time with TAUs, here's what he said to us unprompted.
Spoiler, I like did my dissertation work on them, so I'm an unreliable narrator in this regard.
To me, it's amazing that working with particles makes you love them rather than hate them.
I think that's what determines who stays in the field.
Okay, before I forget, I wanted to give the results. Let's say this was an election. I wanted to say which particle won. So we asked about 20 people what their favorite particle was, and the winner was...
Bum-ba-da-bum!
The top quark! The top quark got 5 votes, actually.
That's not very high statistics.
What's your favorite particle, Tova?
My favorite particle is a J-psi.
And what is a J-psi?
A J-psi is a bound state between 2 charm quarks.
Why is the J-psi your favorite particle?
Well, it has a funny-sounding name, and the funny-sounding name is the reason I like it, although it's not quite as simple as Katarina's answer. It has 2 parts to its name, J and Psi, and it's because 2 experimental teams found it at exactly the same time. And they found it before it had been already named by theorists, as ours tend to be nowadays. So 2 experiments, really fighting to get their results out as fast as possible, both released it and named it themselves, and so we're stuck with both names.
So Tova, any chance you've worked with the J-Psi?
Yeah, so I thought I had really, like, you know, noble, yay experiment reasons for loving the J-Psi. But in truth, the very first thing I did on Atlas was to take a bunch of muons and see if I could reconstruct J-Psi's from them. So it's actually the first thing I did in particle physics. But I liked them before that. Laura, what is your favorite particle?
So my favorite particle is the muon. I guess that's kind of a popular particle, but my reason for liking it is slightly different from what other people have said. So I like the muon because it's kind of at the boundary between particles we are made of and these more abstract particles that we can only see in a particle collider. And the reason that's true is because there are constantly particles bombarding the atmosphere of Earth that come from faraway supernova, for example. And those particles are mostly protons and things like that. But they hit the atmosphere, they interact, and they produce muons, which come down through the atmosphere. And through us, they don't interact very strongly. And so we're kind of constantly being bombarded by muons from outer space. And I just think that's really cool, because even though the muon doesn't live that long, it decays, it is something that is a part of our everyday life and has been since the beginning of the Earth.
It actually lives almost just long enough to reach us from the atmosphere to the Earth's surface. It's right on the border of never actually making it down here.
I think it's really cool because it's kind of a bridge between the up quark, the down quark, and the electron, which is what we're made of, and the photon, which we can see things with. And all of these other things like the top and the B quark, which we don't directly interact with on a daily basis. Muons are kind of, they're a bridge between the particles of the everyday and the particles of the LHC.
So Laura, how many years did you spend working on the muon detector?
So it's true that I worked for 5 or 6 years on the ATLAS muon detector, although I will maintain, like you did, that I liked the muon best even before I started working on the muon spectrometer.
So it seems that even we are not immune to the rule that almost everybody chooses the particle they've worked on as their favorite particle. Are there any exceptions, though?
Yeah, so we did find, in wandering around looking for people who work on ATLAS, we did find two people who are new to CERN. So these are summer students who had just arrived, had not worked on any particle physics before basically we showed up at their desk, and they had very different answers from the rest of our colleagues.
My name is Alan Morningstar. I'm an undergrad at McMaster University in Hamilton and a summer student here at CERN and at U of T in Toronto.
Okay, what's your favorite particle?
The proton.
And why is the proton your favorite particle?
Can I change it to the neutron? 14 minutes is just a great lifetime to have, you know? That's a nice one. That's kind of cool. The 14-minute lifetime is so, it's on the scale of everyday action. That's kind of cool.
What about that makes it fascinating to you? Like, why is having it on a human scale interesting?
Well, I don't know. I mean, because we're human, so we have to look at everything through our own kind of lens. And it's difficult to understand sometimes the different orders of magnitude, right? When someone says, there's, you know, whatever, how many, like, I don't know, 400 billion stars in the Milky Way. I don't know if that's right, but that's a number that we really don't understand. Whereas 14 minutes is a number that we actually find tangible.
It's funny that he says he's looking at it from a human perspective, because obviously we've all spent too much time here and that perspective has been lost.
Finally, only one person was unwilling to choose a favorite particle.
My name is Joanna. I'm from the University of Toronto. I'm finishing up my fourth year of undergrad this year, and I'm a summer student here at CERN. It's my first time here.
So our question is, what is your favorite particle?
My favorite particle? I like all particles equally.
Have you worked with any particles?
No, I have not.
Do you think if you work with one, it will become your favorite?
Most probably, because ATLAS is my favorite project, and I didn't have one until I started working on it.
One day, she too will have a favorite particle.
At least we can extrapolate from our sample size of 20.
Thank you for listening to In Particular.
You can find us on Facebook or on Twitter at Particle Podcast.
You can find our website at cern.ch/inparticular, or you can email us at inparticular@cern.ch.
We always love to hear from you.
This episode was produced by myself, Tova Holmes, and Laura Gentil,
with sound and music production by Larry Lee.
If you'd like to check out some of these Particle Zoo plushies that Daniela talked about, check out particlezoo.net.
Did we record all that?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Fantastic. Okay.